Last week, Amazon finalized its $13.7 billion acquisition of Whole Foods Market, an acquisition that sent shocks through the grocery industry. Federal regulators gave the merger a swift approval, saying it would not hurt competition. But the move has renewed calls among some researchers and activists for antitrust action against Amazon and other tech conglomerates like Facebook and Google, which the critics say have monopolies over their respective markets. And one of those critics is Matt Stoller. He's a fellow at the think tank Open Markets, and he joins me now. Matt, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks.
So first of all, let me just get your take on this. Is Amazon a monopoly?
Certainly in some areas, yes.
And what areas would you say it's most monopolistic?
Well, I mean, the oldest area it's been in is books, and it certainly has control of at least the ebook market, probably the whole book market.
And so then, you know, there's a regulatory definition of monopolies. I mean, how would we define what a monopoly is?
The definition I like is what Louis Brandeis gave to Congress in 1913, which is that it's unified control of a recognized branch of trade in a good or service.
Okay, so given that, I mean, I suppose a lot of people can think about the early 20th centuries and the monopolies that existed there in various industries. And then there's also, you know, in telephone monopolies that we had at one time or another. But today, in the economy today, I mean, what companies do you see are the best examples of a new golden age of monopolies?
Well, I mean, there are certain monopolies that are what one would call natural, which is to say, like electric utilities, where it just doesn't make sense to string multiple power lines into buildings. And those need to be regulated. But in terms of markets where you could have rivals, but you don't have rivals, you know, you can just see something like search engines. There's basically Google, and what Google does essentially structures the internet. For social media, you have Facebook. And for online retail, while there are alternatives, Amazon is capturing an increasing amount of online commerce. Mm. So I would say those three institutions are the most obvious and most powerful monopolistic institutions in our culture right now.
So it's interesting because, of course, one immediate counterargument to the use of the word monopoly is that companies might say, well, our size allows us to achieve a certain economy of scale. And that's a familiar argument, right? Anytime a couple of big companies want to merge, they immediately say it's good for consumers because we can achieve scale.
Sure.
What's your thought about that?
Well, I mean, there's the difference between monopoly and just a traditional kind of economy of scale is that monopoly is a financial arrangement. So if you own a bunch of factories, each factory might be a certain size because it's, say that they're producing goods independently of one another. You know, they might be a certain size because they need to be that size to be most efficient. But the ownership of those factories in common, that's a financial arrangement that doesn't have anything to do with economies of scale. But there are also diseconomies of scale. So as an example, you have something like fake news, right? Fake news, which moves through the platforms of Facebook and Google, which are actually financed by the advertising monopoly of Facebook and Google. That's something that Facebook and Google don't like, but it operates on their platform. And it's just because those institutions are too big to actually take care of the property that they're supposed to manage.
So you got to a point I was going to make or a question I was going to ask you, which is, what would you see as the downsides or the harm that these modern day would-be monopolies maybe doing by virtue of their size and reach?
Right. Well, there's a lot of downsides, but the most the way it was traditionally formulated in American history is this concept of absentee ownership, which is to say that the people that own a property don't live near it and don't take care of it because it doesn't affect them. Traditionally, we've had a goal in this country of keeping institutions small and local, retail, banks, farms. We've always wanted them to be family-owned or as small as possible. And certain institutions like auto companies or chemical companies need a certain amount of scale. And then you have network monopolies like, you know, telephones and electric utilities. But what happens when you do organize, say, chain stores like Walmart or now Amazon, is you have communities that lose their control over the institutions that organize their retail space. So you've seen you lose community leadership. You you lose, you know, local charity, you lose local bank deposits. So you've seen in areas that are dominated by Walmart, you know, you see a spike in obesity, you see a drop in voting rates, you see a whole bunch of social indicators that are negative. And you'll probably see that as well with Amazon, although there hasn't been the sociological research done yet.
Isn't part of the problem here that these companies are monopolies in the eyes of some by virtue of the fact that they also created the markets or the industries that they're in? I mean, like, so before Facebook became as big as it did, we didn't really have a robust social media market, right? And same with online retail. Like, so it's like almost putting the cart before the horse here. And is that a challenge for regulators now?
Well, I would just take issue with the premise of the question. So we did have social networking before Facebook. We had MySpace. We had actually a competitive market. And we've seen the development of new social networks since Facebook emerged. Like, for example, you saw the development of Instagram, WhatsApp. You know, Google, same thing. They created a search engine, but you also you saw them buy DoubleClick. You saw them buy YouTube. You saw them buy AdMob. So these are institutions that are not actually creating industries, although that happens in some cases. These are conglomerates. They are the product of acquisitions which are inherently political. So they like to pretend like they invented all of this cool stuff. In fact, they did invent a little bit of it, but most of it is just about capturing what other people did.
So do you think that there should be some regulation or some antitrust regulation specifically brought to these companies?
Yeah, I mean, these are, you know, you need a mix of antitrust investigations just to figure out how these companies organize these industries, how they use data, how they manipulate us, what kind of prices they charge. Are there discriminatory prices? What are they doing in terms of racial, ethnic, gender-based choices? And then what you'd basically do is you'd use a mix of antitrust to block them from using power in one market to get into another market. You might need to, say, separate the search engine from the advertising network or from YouTube. And then at the same time, you'd have to lay what are called public utility rules or common carriage rules on, say, Google, like the Europeans just did, saying that they couldn't favor their own services through their own search engine.
Right.
So it would be a mix of rules.
I just want to jump in here because you bring up the European counterexample, which is an excellent one. Like, Europe does effectively see Google as a monopoly and has slapped them with a huge fine, right?
Yeah. And in fact, the FTC, our FTC did as well. They saw them as engaging in anti-competitive behavior. They just hid the study and didn't do anything about it. But the Europeans said, you know, Google, what you did is you created your own search cost comparison site. You downgraded everyone else's. And then you got rid of, once you drove everyone else out of business, then you got rid of your own cost comparison site and made it all advertising based. And so now there are no cost comparison sites because of your monopolistic, the abuse of the, essentially the railroad tracks that you own, which are the, you know, the search engine. And they said, we're going to fine you $2.7 billion and we're going to implement a rule saying you have to give equal treatment to everyone who is on the internet. You can't prioritize your own services.
Mm. But do you think that there's any appetite in Washington whatsoever to really more pointedly address the monopolistic tendencies of, you know, these giant companies, Google, Amazon, that are so interwoven into American life? Because what, the Obama administration and the Bush administration before it both declined to bring a single major monopolization suit against an American company. So I don't see anything turning that tide.
Well, I'm optimistic. There's been an intellectual kind of breakdown in American anti-monopoly rules since essentially the early 80s. But because what we saw with the financial crisis, the creation of too big to fail institutions, there's now an appetite among the public. And now economists and lawyers are doing research that actually looks at these institutions and says, you know what, we really do need to bring back some of these monopoly rules. And I see appetite on both the Republican and the Democratic side on this.
Matt Stoller is a fellow at the Open Markets Program. Really fascinating conversation, Matt. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Now, we should note that we spoke with Stoller a bit earlier, and since we taped that conversation, Stoller's think tank, Open Markets, was forced to spin off from its parent organization, the left-leaning New America Foundation, because of pressure from Google, a major funder. Last week, New America fired the director of the Open Markets Program, a longtime critic of Google. Both Google and New America have denied accusations that the move was retribution for criticism of the company's business practices. You're listening to Here and Now.